Welcome to today's edition of the Rush Limbaugh Show podcast.
What a gift and privilege it's been to be with you this week. In a series of days the Lord has made for us in this time in which he's decided we will live. It is, in fact, Open Line Friday, started 3 decades ago when the Maha decided to take the biggest career risk ever known to any talk show host to open up the phones to people like you and I. 800-282-2882. I wish I could find the calls I made to the Maha, the 2 times I got through. The one time we had James Golden was screening, Bo Snurther. We had him on this week. He's done this podcast. It's Rush Limbaugh, the man behind the Golden EIB microphone, which is available at rushlimbaugh.com. And he didn't let me on the first time. I wish I could just get a tape of when Bo on the, you're not right for this. It was hard. It took a long time to come back from that. Did you see the ultimatum? So someone typed onto Joe Biden's Twitter page, "The rule is now simple. Get vaccinated or wear a mask until you, the choice is yours." So let me de-Bidenize that. The rule is now simple. Get vaccinated or wear a mask until you do. The choice is yours. So not only do the people who run Biden's Twitter page misunderstand entirely being governed at the consent of the governed, they're also missing a major point of this. It's not simple. What if you've had the COVID and your natural antibodies are in fact superior to any injection or vaccination, mRNA or otherwise? They have broader ability to cover variants. This is being proven as we speak. The immune system that the good Lord gave us is a great system. So it's not even that simple. And we're going to get to Biden's dementia, you're reading these words in a second. But let's do that. I found some things on Twitter. People responding to this, people of the left, and I would think they'd be saying, oh, okay, good. Now this has been settled. So we'll get to that in a second. Here is a montage of Joe Biden's dementia emphasizing the ultimatum someone typed on Twitter for him.
When your country asked you to get vaccinated, you did. The American people stepped up. You did what I consider to be your patriotic duty. That fully vaccinated people, if you've been fully vaccinated, you no longer need to wear a mask. If you are fully vaccinated, you no longer need to wear a mask. But if you've not been vaccinated, you still need to wear a mask. Everyone to get vaccinated. Find a vaccine site near you. You can go and get vaccinated now. Get the shot. The rule is very simple. Get vaccinated or wear a mask until you do. It's vaxed or masked. Get vaccinated. If you're vaccinated, you can be around the vaccinated or unvaccinated people. But if you're not vaccinated or not fully vaccinated, you should wear a mask for your own protection or the protection of other unvaccinated people. Most people under the age of 65 aren't vaccinated yet. If you're fully vaccinated, you can take your mask off. If you haven't been vaccinated, wear your mask for your own protection. If you've been vaccinated, you don't have to wear your mask. But if you've not been vaccinated, please wear the mask. Please wear the mask.
So apparently they've discovered something new about these injections. Or they've discovered something new about masks.
Or they've discovered something new about Joe Biden's polling.
Even the media couldn't help him this week. So we go from, well, the fact is, even if you've been fully vaccinated, by which I mean 2 shots, you're still a walking death trap for most people. Just looking at someone, you might not give them the COVID, but you could always give them, I forget the name of that made-up disease in the movie The Stand by Stephen King. Was that Captain Drips? It's no problem. But then there's this. This is Lena, open singer name, Lena Wen, medical doctor, CNN. She's a WAPO contributor, visiting indoctrinator at the GW Public Health. That means professor indoctrinator. I'm shocked by the CDC's abrupt reversal of their guidelines for vaccinated people. While I agree that vaccinated can choose what they want to do, this only works if there's a way to check vaccination status. Otherwise, what's to stop unvaccinated people from endangering everyone? Reminder, the COVID is age stratified, health condition stratified, 99.87% overall survival rate. Then I looked at the responses. Exactly my fear. I have been fully vaccinated, but I have bronchitis in my lungs from severe asthma infections. I have no way to protect myself from those refusing vaccines until I am worried, and I'm still worried about my risk level. That's very scary. I understand that you feel traumatic about this or feel traumatized, and maybe don't wear a cloth on your face, building a dark, warm, moist space that might cause an infection like that. This is Casey Hunt. Now, I just thought this was a rando on Twitter. Turns out she is the NBC News apparatchik on Capitol Hill. Sure. Oh, no, sure. So, what do I do with my child who's too little for a mask? Now that these rules have changed, and I have no idea if the people in, say, the grocery store are telling the truth about their vaccination status. Is it safe to take him inside? For people without children, this seems happy. This response. My grandbabies haven't been in a public space since March. The 15-month-old, never. Going to keep with this until the virus is all but gone. Yes, it's hard. Children are at a statistical zero risk of dying from this. They are literally 150 more times likely to die from the flu. You know what they are, in fact, very much at risk of? Becoming shut-ins their entire life. And having anxiety and being unable to deal with human beings or to form friendships or to resolve conflict. You have stolen the public life of a 15-month-old until the virus is all but gone. Man, I hate to be the bearer of bad news. I probably shouldn't even say this. The Spanish flu is still in the air. It's never gone away. We simply developed immunities to it. The Democrats have been so good at scaring their victims that they can't be unscared. So for those of us who chose to stay level-headed in all this, this is good news for us. Now, the MAHA was very, very clear from the very beginning of these selective lockdowns, long before we had the data to prove they've medically useless and deadly. And Rush insisted all of us demand they end very quickly and that we never accept the technocratic dystopia of a new normal.
We've never done anything like this for any other virus that has ever happened. We have never shut down the country like this for practically anything. I can't separate all of this. There are people benefiting from this politically. That, to me, is sick. But then that's their modus operandi, benefiting from the pain of others. That pain creates dependency, which prompts votes for Democrats. But mostly it is, I'm just not sure that it's been necessary to stop the virus, because it hasn't. And then I read, they're finally being honest. This was not the lockdown, the shutdown, never intended to stop the virus. It was never intended to slow the growth of the virus. All it was intended to do, they say, was to flatten the curve, slow the infection rate, not end it. Slowing it is only going to extend it. But they said we had to slow the infection rate. I've looked at history. I've looked around the world in pandemics, and I haven't seen this procedure that we are employing here as having ever successfully beaten back a virus. Can you blame me for being suspicious? I mean, if this were the recipe, okay, There's a runaway virus in our country. Immediately, we need to shut down. 22 million to 30 million people need to stop working. Their jobs need to be shut down and ended. Their businesses need to be closed. You can't find for me anywhere in world history where that has been a way to defeat a virus. And yet we are doing it. And now when anybody talks about ending it and opening up, look what happens to those people. They're targeted, finger-pointing, blame, shame. How dare you? You're killing people. You're putting millions of people at risk.
It's extraordinary to say, but Rush was far more on point and right than perhaps even he knew. The lesson from the lockdown during the Spanish flu 100 years ago, where you could be shot for leaving your home, the county sheriff could say, get back in your house. And if you said no, he could say, okay, I'm going to shoot you and do it and get away with it. It didn't stop the virus. It can't. Furthermore, face coverings were mandatory across the country. The technocrat of his time who pushed all that response wrote an apology letter to the American people that none of this worked. So you get people like Leanna Wen. We mentioned her, the MD, contributor to CNN, WAPO. She's panicked because some people might not be vaccinated and not wearing a mask. Incidentally, Team EIB just pointed this out to me. Greg just pointed this out. She's the immediate past president of Planned Parenthood who, from memory, I believe she's the one who was forced to resign because she would not say that men could get pregnant. So just turn to her for all and everything science, particularly related to the human body and human biology. Oh, wait. She actually can speak common sense. But just not on this virus. Elaine Stefanik is in. Liz Cheney is out. I guarantee you, even I, well, not even me, but even Rush, I wonder what he'll think about how right he was about this. That's next on the EIB Network. Todd Herman, your guide host. It's Open Line Friday on the EIB Network, 800-282-2882. Todd Herman, your guide host this week. My evil plan worked. I mispronounced Elise Stefanik's name. I said Elaine because I was just playing a game to see if I would get a note from EIB if they'd correct me. Because, you know, us talk show hosts, we're a fragile bunch. We want to make sure that praise, when it comes, is honest, etc. So Elise Stefanik is in and Liz Cheney is out. So now watch what happens. And the Mockingbird media will now make Liz Cheney the face of the thoughtful GOP. She's the new Mitt Romney. And she's already, someone asked her, are you going to run for president to keep President Trump from getting back into the White House? Are you going to run for president? And she hasn't ruled this out. And there is a group of young legislators up and coming in some of these blue states that if we stop HR1, which is the Democrats seizing control over all elections so that they are no longer elections. If we stall the court packing scheme, and if we get true election integrity in the states, this new wave of Republican legislators who've come up in states like New York, they know how to win elections in those places. And there's at some point there has to be a whiplash, because people will, at some point, this stuff will start to harm them. Like in New York, 40% of businesses are gone and commercial real estate's tanking and people are fleeing to Florida and to Texas. There's an inevitable backlash eventually, even now. Like Fauci's scare people into compliance thing finally folded in the face of the polls for Biden. So there's people, for instance, Assemblyman Colin Schmidt from New York. It's a very good, solid young conservative. I think Colin is running for Congress. So Elise represents the people who just have this insane notion of what if we put America first? What if we rebuilt the lifeboat of the world? And what if we had our interests at heart? And instead of buying, as John Kerry wanted us to do, useless, inefficient windmills from the Chinese Communist Party manufactured by people in concentration camps, slaves, what if we just became energy independent? So Liz Cheney is out of GOP leadership. Elise Stefanik is in. And Rush would be really pleased with this news. He admired Stefanik's tenacity during the hearings about Trump's phone call with the president of Ukraine. You remember that phony controversy that Shifty Schiff made up?
A lot of people are going to say that Marie Yovanovitch is a sympathetic figure because it's just the easiest way to show you support a woman. And a lot of people, why do you think Schiff isn't going to let a woman question her? So Ms. Stefanik, the Republican woman congressman, wants to ask her some questions. Nunes cannot allocate any of his time to you. She doesn't want another woman asking her questions because there goes the whole idea that there might be some sexism here. Because if Trump's involved, there has to be, right? Now, you might not think this is any big deal. I am an etymologist. I am a student of words. I am a student of the usage of words and how they are selectively used to manipulate the emotions of people. It's very easily done, very easy to do, and it is being done here. By declaring that she is a sympathetic figure, you're automatically conferring upon her total credibility and honesty without examining what she's saying. You're giving her a pass by calling her a sympathetic figure. By saying she's a sympathetic figure, you can't challenge her. She gets a free pass. She's a sympathetic figure. And yet, ladies and gentlemen, she was let go in May, 2 months before the phone call the whistleblower lied about, 2 months before the phone call Schiff lied about. Here's Schiff. This is Nunes attempting to, what's the term? He's yielding back some of his time to Representative Elise Stefanik, Republican New York. And this one, Pencilneck would not allow that to happen.
I know, Ms. Stefanik, you had a few quick questions for the ambassador. Yield to you, Ms. Stefanik.
Thank you, Mr. Nunes. Ambassador Yovanovitch, thank you for being here today.
The gentlewoman will suspend.
What is the interruption for this time? It is our time.
The gentlewoman will suspend. You're not recognized. Mr. Nunes, you are minority counsel.
I just recognize.
Under the House Resolution 660, you're not allowed to yield time except to minority counsel.
The ranking member yielded time to another member of Congress.
No, that is not accurate.
You're gagging the
young lady from
New York.
Ambassador Yovanovitch, I want to thank you for being here today.
Gentlewoman will suspend. You're not recognized.
This is the fifth time you have interrupted members of Congress, newly elected members of Congress.
The woman will suspend.
So Schiff, acting as the authoritarian. Now, these were the rules that Schiff put in place. The Republicans are just trying to demonstrate the unfairness of the rules. They know. I mean, Nunes knows that he cannot yield his time to Stefanik, but he does it. He makes Schiff bug out his eyes and look like the authoritarian figure that he is. The gentlewoman will suspend. It's all part of their effort to make this scene for what it is. It's a one-sided sideshow. Elise Stefanik is a star of these hearings. New York Congresswoman. She is fabulous. She's just been doing a bang-up job. She is fearless. She's been going after Schiff and has forced Schiff into a position of being mean to the girl, which, of course, Democrats supposedly never are. And she gets both witnesses to say that Hunter Biden on the board of Burisma had the potential for conflict of interest.
Every witness who has testified and has been asked this has answered yes. Do you agree that Hunter Biden on the board of Burisma has the potential for the appearance of a conflict of interest?
Certainly the potential, yes.
And Ms. Williams?
Yes.
Okay, so this has not been a good day for Biden. I don't care what anybody says. It has not been a good day for Biden.
And these are the stakes. Now, number one, there's Rush calling out this woman who is now in GOP leadership as Liz Cheney is put aside in a non-leadership role in this capacity. And, of course, as I say, the mockingbirds will now crown her the thinking persons, the moral persons, GOP. And she likes to say, oh, I'm for the Constitution. In her reading of the Constitution, then, presidents get to say, you either get a shot or you put a muzzle on. Choice is yours, but those are the two choices you get to make. In her view of the Constitution, presidents get to say, you know what, I think this race of people is going to get taxpayer money, but openly not this race of people. Openly gets to do that. That in her view of the Constitution, apparently Liz Cheney's, presidents get to have a method of simply destroying the suburbs, which is expressed in this affirmatively furthering fair housing thing. Elise Stefanik seems a lot more like you and I, doesn't she? With some common sense, understanding the stakes of us against leftism to preserve this country? The Supreme Court may look at the most offensive word. We'll talk about that next on the EIB Network. So it's quite likely that the, well, I don't know if it's likely that the Supreme Court's going to hear a case on the most offensive word. And this would be ground on which I would hope we'd not tread. What they're trying to discover, as John Roberts' court does, sometimes just brand new aspects of the Constitution that no one's ever seen. It's the magic Roberts asterisk. Hope that doesn't happen. They're trying to figure out if having a really offensive word, like if, for instance, the N-word or calling, you know, a slur, a racial slur, scrawled onto the wall of a of an employer is grounds for employees to sue for hostile work environment. And one would assume that if someone scrawled something on the wall and it was left there for months, that is a different issue than if someone scrawled something on the wall and it was left there until, you know, someone reported that it was taken down. And this comes from a real-life case. A guy worked at a hospital. What he described sounds like a horrible place to work. Sounds like it was a Dallas hospital. From what he describes, it sounds like it would be a very awful place to work. I wouldn't want to see people treated that way, and I don't think you'd want to see people treated that way. But this caught my eye. This is the AP talking about this case. They say already the court's newest members, both appointed by President Donald Trump, are on record with seemingly different views. The case is, this is the part, also a test on whether the justices are willing to wade into the ongoing complex conversations about race happening nationwide. I'm sorry. There are very few places where there's any complexity to the conversations about race happening in the United States. Critical race theory decomplexes that. Well, that's a terrible word. Makes it less complex. It makes it too simple because that's the point. It is about dividing people. It's very simple. The problem with the world is whiteness that's caused by white people, and the problem with white people is they're white. It's a circular issue. That's there's no complexity there. Likewise, the other way they're pushing this is Black Lives Matter Incorporated, which is very, very easy. Black people never get a fair shake anytime, and all cops are murderers. There are so many complex issues that if we had the bravery to discuss it, as has been done on this program on countless occasions, there is nuance after nuance in relation to race. But the AP doesn't want that complexity. And the scrolling of a word on a wall is not a particularly complex issue. It is, that's a rude and horrible dehumanizing word. And does that mean you can sue your employer out of existence? But that's not, it's not complexity to seeking. Now, Rush, remember when Rush talked about this case involving some frat boys out of OU who were denied their free speech rights by a university for repeating offensive lyrics from a rap song?
I remember way back when I was much younger, when I first began to intellectually understand and talk about the whole concept of free speech as a constitutional right, I remember running into William F. Buckley, as many of you know, one of my heroes and idols. And Buckley was one of the first people I had heard say that the answer to offensive speech is more speech. The reaction to offensive speech is more speech, not restrictive. The only way to discredit offensive speech, which is specifically the kind of speech protected by the First Amendment. I mean, if everybody said what everybody agrees with, you wouldn't need a First Amendment guaranteeing it. The First Amendment free speech clause exists because everybody knows you're going to hear things that offend you. And particularly in the political arena, which is what the First Amendment free speech thing was really aimed at. They didn't want to limit political speech in any way, shape, manner, form. And it's all because you know they're going to hear things you don't like, you don't want to hear, you're going to be offended by. And just because you were offended was no grounds for stopping it. So the answer, the first theory that I came across, in dealing with offensive speech, the answer was more speech. The answer is not restricting speech. That doesn't help anybody. And I'm starting to see this repeated now as sort of a cycle. My point is that young people are beginning to articulate the free speech arguments that I first heard when I was their age, however many number of years ago. These kids are parroting. These frat boys are parroting what's already out there. They're not creating it. They're mimicking it. And the people who are not offended by it know that. And to condemn the frat boys would be to condemn the rap music business, which they can't do. They don't want to go there. So they're kind of forced into defending the frat boys. The frat boys did not invent any of this. But nevertheless, they're being defended by people who just last week would be condemning the hell out of them. Anyway, I thought it was fascinating. The point is, if you travel anywhere in America and you hear music, you can't miss these words anymore on the radio now or however people are streaming musical content. If you can hear what they're listening to, you can't miss it. You can't miss the N-word. You can't miss the B-I-H word. You can't miss ho. You can't miss all these vile lyrics. It's everywhere. And I think people are fed up with it. So you have these frat boys who they're on a bus. They're probably consuming adult beverages. I still think one of the factors here, they're just trying to impress a bunch of girls, which is what frat boys do. That's why there are frat boys. That's why there are fraternities. And they're just trying to impress the girls with their bravery, their courage, their creativity, or what have you. And somebody overheard it and blah, blah. I'm telling you, I think the reason that so many people are coming to their defense. By the way, that group FIRE, FIRE.com, that I could not remember the name of the acronym, it is Foundation for Individual Rights and Education. It's an entire free speech movement devoted to freedom of speech and education. It's a direct outgrowth of the censorship that accompanies political correctness. I mean, there's all kinds of backlash, folks, in certain segments of younger generations to all of this PC stuff. And I think the reason the frat boys have so many usual suspects coming to their defense, namely, because to condemn the frat boys would immediately then force them into a position they don't want to be on, is defending the same words when sung by a rapper. I mean, if the frat boys are guilty of vile, disgusting speech, then what about the rappers who are becoming millionaires, multimillionaires, and winning awards using the words? That has to be what the mitigating factor is, no question in my mind.
And Rush mentions, people hearing this in lyrics, and this would, to me, if we're going to now take to the Supreme Court the most offensive word and is something, then therefore someone can be sued. Can we sue, I don't know, YouTube for leaving up offensive lyrics on the cell phone of kids? I mean, after all, you're paying the bill for your kid's cell phone. In fact, your monthly bill can fluctuate like the stock market. If you're using data for anything on your phone, binge watching, web searching, you name it, it's likely increasing the cost of your cell phone bill in a way you'd never make sense of. Switch to Pure Talk with a flat $30 per month charge for all of that. When Rush discovered Pure Talk last year, he detailed it out for us. It went like this.
You shop for the best price you can find on insurance, on home mortgages, on vacation travel, maybe even cheeseburgers. I don't know. So why not do the same thing with cellular phone service? Your cell phone number is your own, and who you choose for cellular service is all up to you. One company makes such a compelling offer, it's worth thinking about. It's Pure Talk. They offer you unlimited talk, text, and 6 gigs of data for just $30 a month. And guess what? If you go over on the data, they don't charge you for it. Pure Talk. Compare that monthly price, $30 a month, to your current cell phone bill. And you'll see why it makes sense to change. Now, I don't know what your cell phone bill is, but I would wager you that it's $60 or more. Maybe $120, maybe $75 or more. This outfit, Pure Talk, is offering you unlimited talk, unlimited text and 6 gigs of data for $30 a month. Now, Pure Talk knows they're in the same business with the likes of AT&T and Verizon and T-Mobile. In fact, get this, they use the same cell towers of one of the big companies that covers 99% of the country. They offer superior service. 100% of the Pure Talk customer support team is right here in America. So you make one phone call to them today, you can start to save money by switching to Pure Talk. All you do is get your cell phone and dial #250. Next, you say Pure Talk. It's that simple. You'll save 50% off your first month. That's #250, and then say Pure Talk. One of the Pure Talk customer service people will be right there on the phone to help you. And by the way, it's legit. $30 a month, unlimited talk, text, and 6 gigs of data.
It's Todd Herman, your guide host this week on the EIB Network. It's been a just great week with Team EIB, doing all the hard work. The podcast, rushlimbaugh.com, you'll get Rush Limbaugh, the man behind the golden EIB microphone. James Golden, whom you know as Bo Snerdly, was on with us this week. Just great interview. You'll love this podcast. Just have to give you this. Alex Berenson, former New York Times reporter, points to Phil Kirpin's tweet. Senator Burr just asked Fauci, Peter Marks from the FDA, and the CDC director what percentage of their own employees are vaccinated. Fauci. Well, it's probably a little bit more than half, around 60%. Marks said about the same. Walensky dodged the question. But remember, everybody who doesn't get a vaccine is basically a murderer. Let's talk to Laura, way out in the separate country of Seattle, Washington. Laura, welcome to the Rush Limbaugh program. Todd Herman, your guide host. Welcome, Laura.
Hi, Todd. It's such an honor to talk to you. I wanted to call in. I'm a conservative. I'm an Orthodox Jew. I'm a trained nurse, and I'm a mother of kids affected by vaccines, and I'm so upset. Even more so today, that no one is talking about people with legitimate medical exemptions. We are being canceled out of life.
Well, yeah. And what are, in your case, you have children with health complications where these things could harm them. But you also have, as a trained nurse, you know the actuarial tables. Let me ask, how old are your kids, Laura, just roughly?
My kids range from 7 to 16. I have, all of them had extremely high temperatures immediately following vaccines,
yeah,
so high that they could be, you know, life-threatening, having seizures. I have one who's deeply affected. He has low-tone muscles, and he cannot walk and barely talk. He's completely relying on me, and he's almost 8 years old.
Yeah. Yeah, so these your beautiful children are at risk in ways people won't understand. So I don't mean to make light of this, because I won't, but I'll just offer you this. I know Seattle is, I didn't realize really how terrible Seattle is interpersonally until I spent some time away, because my friends live there, my family lives there, I've got great colleagues there, my show originates from there, we know we've been staying in Idaho, and I would just suggest maybe one of the things I would consider is printing out some work from rationalground.com. I'm not kidding. Because you're going to get worse than side eye in Seattle. You're going to get yelled at and called names if you're not masked, if you're not, you know, if you're not getting these shots for your kids. Rational Ground has the simple charts you can hand someone. My 15-year-old, your 15-year-old is more likely to die falling down a stair. Your younger kids are literally more likely to die being eaten by dogs. So I you know, these are things that I think we need to hand people to wake them from this. But what you're pointing out is in Washington State, they've created a segregated society for people who will outsource their critical medical thinking to Tony Fauci, whose own staff is not vaccinated. How's that feel to you to know that basically half of Tony Fauci's staff isn't even vaccinated?
I mean, I understand it. I think they're going to hide that because they're all for, you know, my body, my choice issues in other areas.
Yeah.
But then when it applies to this, it's a complete double standard. And they're not going to, you know, put that out there, how many people are really concerned. They're only going to highlight that you must get this and make it so much so that your life is canceled in every area if you don't.
Yep. And that's easy to do in Seattle because the apparatus is in place where people like they like bullying people in Seattle, and particularly, and I'm sure you've experienced this in Seattle, it's becoming a very anti-Semitic place. The city council has basically avowed anti-Semites on it. So, Laura, appreciate the phone call. My prayers for your kids. Appreciate your bravery and continuing to face this. Chris in Brooklyn, New York, you're on the Rush Limbaugh program. Todd Herman, your guide host. We've got about a minute together, Chris. So glad you called. Let's hear what you have to say.
Hey, God. Hey, Todd. I'm sorry, I called you God. Hey, Todd. How you doing? First, it's an honor to speak to you, and thank you again for being one of those people who helped, you know, keep Russia's legacy going. Real quick, two things. I'm in New York, right? I called once before. I spoke with Ken Matthews to speak about how I'm under the tyranny of Andrew Cuomo. The first thing I want to say is, have you noticed how, you know, all his all his accusers and all the charges being pushed up against him and all that just went away.
Just, yeah.
You notice how, I believe it was last week where he just proposed pushing a legislation to stop the discrimination on the people who have been vaccinated. But it's the complete opposite. I'm telling you, they need to do it on the people who have not and will not be vaccinated. Todd, I am 29 years old. I'm healthy. I have no reason to be vaccinated. I don't discriminate against the people who want to be vaccinated. More power to them. But for to call me un-American or a tyrant, you know, a bigot just because I won't get vaccinated.
Well, you're not a bigot. You're not a bigot because you won't. Well, you won't get vaccinated. You're a bigot because you listen to EIB, don't you know the rules? Oh, I appreciate the phone call, Chris. It's Todd Herman, your guide host this week on the EIB Network. It's Todd Herman, your guide host this week on the EIB Network. I do hope that you are a member of Rush 24/7. If you're not, you'll be stunned at the amount of value that offers. Yesterday, Joe Biden's dementia read a statement about cutting regulations so oil could start flowing again. Regulations that meant when the pipeline was hacked, it actually needed the government to step out of the way so they could do their jobs. Rush was super clear on economic conservatism. Here's a bit of what we'll hear next hour from the Maha.
Focus on deregulation, low taxes. Damn right we are. We're all for people keeping more of what they earn. We are all for people having more disposable income that drives the economy. That causes economic growth. That causes economic rebound. That causes economic opportunity. Damn right we're for it.
Yep. And we'll talk about that. Plus, on the topic of Israel, something really interesting happened yesterday. And I'm trying to figure out if this is a feature or a bug of the Israelis understanding perfectly well what the worldwide Mockingbird Media Corps think of them. With a few exceptions who report fairly on Israel, but thank goodness, they said that they had ground troops in Gaza, and then they retracted it and apologized. Was that an error, or was that a brilliant head fake? Todd Herman, your guide host this week on the EIB Network. It's been a real privilege to be with you this week. It's always an honor to be on EIB on this day and any other that the Lord has made, and these times in which God has decided we will live. It is, in fact, Open Line Friday, 800-282-2882. We'd love to chat with you. RushLimbaugh.com contains all the goodies, including the podcast. James Golden, known as Boast Nerdly, joined us earlier this week. Rush Limbaugh, the man behind the golden EIB microphone, 12-series podcast brought to you by the Tunnel to Towers Foundation and MyPillow. Make sure you get that. I was just so curious looking at the events in Israel and hoping for very little more loss of life, something to stop this, maybe a president, you know, like when we had presidents who maintained actual peace between Israel and its enemies to a large degree. Saw this from Haaretz.com. The Israeli army told foreign media it had ground forces in Gaza, then apologized for misleading them. And knowing how the Mockingbird media views the country of Israel, maybe this was just a brilliant head fake. Why tell them? Because we know on which side they sit. It's part of the alignment against the pursuit of life, liberty, and happiness. I know Israel is not the United States, but there's a similar dynamic. In the first line of this monologue here, from March of 2015, Rush defines the very dynamic the left, and now as I see it, the party, as he points that to them, the process of talking about peace in the Middle East is the goal. Whereas for Trump, the goal was actually achieving peace.
Have you ever stopped to think in this whole Middle East peace process, and remember it, that's all it is. It's a process that never ends. It's a process that recycles and repeats. It's a chess game. And the game never is won or lost. The pieces keep being moved around by different players, depending on the American administration and the Israeli prime minister. And whoever's running the show at the PLO, or Fatah, or whatever they call themselves on any given day. Hamas, Hezbollah, you name it. The Middle East peace process is an industry into itself. It's not designed to be resolved. The Middle East peace process does not have an achievable objective. We're all being lied to about this. We're all being strung along. We're all being roped in thinking for my whole life. There's been no change in it. And we're all roped into believing that there's a solution to this. With words. With the right people. Doctors, nurses, clean water, whatever, speeches, you name it. There aren't any such solutions. And there never are to conflicts like this. Ours is a world governed by the aggressive use of force, not by the aggressive use of process. And this is made especially and abundantly clear in this case, because there is no such thing as a two-state solution. I don't know how much time you out there as individuals pay attention to the Middle East peace process. I wouldn't blame you if you didn't pay much attention at all, because it never changes. It's the same thing. The news on the Middle East peace process does not change from administration to administration, from person to person, from year to year. Oh, you might have changes that appear to be different, like this two-state solution business, or when the Israelis finally decide to accept the idea of a Palestinian state. But then, whenever something like that, which some people would consider progress, is made, guess who undermines it? Hello, Yasser Arafat. Hello, whoever is running the show in negotiations against the Israelis. Because they do not want a two-state solution. There is no two-state solution. There's a one-state solution. The two-state solution actually means the end of Israel. Go take a look at the Hezbollah charter. Take a look at things stated by Yasser Arafat when he was around. Doesn't matter who. You'll say, take a look at the Iranian caliphate. I mean, you'll no matter where you go, the objective is wiping out the Jewish state. It doesn't exist anymore, and neither do the people who at present live in it. That's the objective. That's the only objective. There is no desire to live side by side in peace and tranquility and mutual respect and all of that. There is no such possibility resulting from negotiations. Just never going to happen. And I dare say the people involved in it know it. But the Middle East peace process has become a career. The Middle East peace process is something that when you're 15, you just say, you know, I want to work there. I want to work there for life. I want to become a diplomat, work at the Middle East peace process. I want to be a career appointee to the Middle East peace process so that I'm there no matter who the American administration is, president is. This whole thing is a joke. What makes it obviate the two-state solution? Well, the demand for right of return. Right of return is incumbent on a two-state solution. Right of return means that anybody who wants to call themselves a Palestinian anywhere in the world has the right to come back to whatever they designate as the Palestinian state. And by the way, the Palestinian state is going to be what Israel is now, or there's never going to be a deal. And who's going to make that deal? Who in Israel is going to negotiate the end of the nation? You know, now that I ask that, I can see that that could happen if you elect the wrong Israeli leftists. Israeli leftists are the equivalent of the current Republican leadership in this country, just as the current Republican leadership scared to death of the Democrats, scared to death of the media. The Israeli left is scared to death of Iran. everything you hear about the Republican leadership not criticizing Obama, we don't want to provoke him. We don't want to make him mad. We don't want to anger the independents. We don't want to turn away the independents. We don't want to, we don't want anybody getting mad at us. We don't want the media criticizing. Same thing, the Israeli left, same way, except their objective is placating Iran. They're neophytes who believe that these people can be appeased. The right of return eliminates any possibility of a two-state solution or existence. Besides that, none of the militant Arab population wants a state of Israel. So all this is academic, is my point. Obama inserts himself in this process, actually in the internal affairs of Israel. He inserts himself personally and professionally, throws down this notion of the race card. He starts the whole thing with the race card. Bibi responds to it, and then Bibi's accused as the only one of playing the race card. But I need to ask you, do you ever wonder why the Democrat Party in this country, whoever, be it Bill Clinton, be it Barack Obama, be it John Kerry, I don't care, be it Dianne Feinstein, I don't care, pick one. Why are their allies the Palestinians? And why are the Israelis, which is the ally of the United States, why are the Israelis tied, at least at present with Netanyahu as the prime minister, to the conservative or Republican Party? Why is that? That's more understandable. Shared values, foreign and domestic, same worldview, same Western civilization roots. But why, no matter what Democrat you mention, no matter what Democrat's ever in the White House or whatever Democrat Secretary of State, whatever Democrat ends up anywhere, why are they always simpatico with the Palestinians? And there is an answer to the question. And without going into it in great detail, it's no more complicated. I mean, there is ideology involved. There is a common ground. Leftists will find their friends anywhere around the world. They do not have to be American. They do not have to be domestic in any way. But aside from the ideology commonalities, there are ideological commonalities, and there are some, between the Palestinians and the Democrat Party. When I say Hamas, Hezbollah, there's another reason for it, and that is they feel sorry for them. They feel sorry for them like they feel sorry for the African-American population in America. They actually look at the Palestinians and they see a bunch of people worthy of pity. Oh, these poor guys, look at them. Nobody wants them. They're outcasts. They can't get along with anybody. And they look at the Israelis as the big, evil, white, even though they're not, majority. Israel is the equivalent of the biggest enemy that the Democrats can muster in American conservatism or in the American Republican Party. And it's really no more complicated than that. Well, it is, actually, because there is ideological common ground as well between the enemies of Israel and the Democrat Party in this country. But in large part, it's really no more complicated than the evil tyranny of a majority and the poor, helpless, put upon, discriminated against minority and people of color. And as such, the Democrats look upon these minorities not with respect. They look upon them with pity and the bigotry of low expectations. They're people that can't do anything on their own. They're people who can't survive on their own. They're poor people. They're just incompetent and inept. And they need a champion. They need somebody speaking up for them. They need somebody defending them. And the Democrats rush to the cause, make themselves look big and magnanimous. And there's something magic about always opposing the majority, even when you're it. You disguise the fact that you're the majority. You blame others for being the majority, and you rip them to shreds every day just because they are. And just because they're majority, they're intrinsically corrupt. They're automatically cheating. They're automatically corrupt. They're automatically ingrates because they are the majority. And as such, they're incapable of being sympathized. They're incapable of anybody having empathy for them because they're just evil. And in the liberal worldview, it does not really require any more detail than that, but there is. There are other reasons to explain why the Democrat Party, the American left, is simpatico with the enemies of Israel.
And compare the time under President Trump to now. The goal of the left is to talk about peace in the Middle East. the goal of President Trump was to achieve it. What about chief? What about achieving peace of mind and peace of being? We're going to hear from a gentleman who was the focus of our EIB High Note next. An amazing story of turning life around from being a drug dealer to a person who uses falcons to help redeem the lives of young people. Next on the Rush Limbaugh program, Todd Herman, your guide host this week. It's Todd Herman, your guide host this week on the EIB Network, just around the corner. So Joe Biden canceled the Keystone Pipeline, but now his energy secretary says the pipe is the best way to transport fuel. Plus, do you remember when it was us, it's Team EIB, the family here, all of us, who were in fact supporting the lives of the caribou with a pipeline? We'll remind you of all that. Just this week on Monday on EIB's High Note, we told the story and heard from a gentleman named Rodney Stotts, who at one point in life had been a drug dealer and is now someone who helps redeem young lives employing raptors, falcons. And Rodney joins us now from Charlotte Courthouse. Oh, wait, I know that. Virginia. Rodney Stotts joins us. Rodney, welcome to Rush's program. I'm so glad you could join us.
Yeah, thank you for having me. I truly appreciate it.
It's just it's neat to talk about redemption in these days and a man who is helping youngsters. And I just wanted to ask this question. I work with some people who are recently incarcerated, and I've noticed something about people who had been successful drug dealers is they have really like sharp skills, sharp minds that can be transferred into daily life in a successful way. Is that an observation only of my making, or have you seen the same thing with people who have used their great intelligence to deal drugs and then can go do things that are, you know, more helpful for society?
Well, a lot of times what people don't understand is the person that's dealing drugs wasn't stupid. They was hungry. They needed a roof over their head. They needed clothes, not holy shoes. Or they needed to eat. So it wasn't that they were dumb. It was that the fact that they just had to use what they knew to make money at that time, got locked up, and now that they realize that that lifestyle isn't what they want, that sharp mind was always there, and they just employ it to something else now.
Yeah. And for you, tell the story about meeting these raptors, these falcons. I can't imagine it ever occurred to you, Rodney, that one day you would be a falconer. But can you talk about that first time that you saw these beautiful birds and what that meant to you?
Well, the first time I actually held one, we brought back the bald eagles to the nation's capital from 93 to 97. We had a program where we had bald eagles and we brought them back. So that was the first interaction. When the first interaction with a Eurasian eagle owl was the one I actually held on my arm. I was taken somewhere else. You couldn't imagine the beautiful sight. You're standing here amongst all this garbage and trash, and all you see is paradise. I couldn't see anything except for beauty. I just was lost.
I think that the Lord sometimes plants in us love for certain, you know, people, but also I think certain species. I think there are people who are calmed by the presence of dogs and cats, and I eat meat, so I'm not going to sit here and be a hypocrite or anything. But in my backyard, when I see a deer, I love to look at them and sort of commune in that way. I know that makes me sound very hippie-ish, and that's fine. But Rodney, when you held these raptors, then there was an opportunity for you to actually become a falconer. And what did that mean to you, and who introduced that opportunity to you?
Well, actually, what happened was the program I was working with, we only work with adjudicated youth. But people, you know, kids that have dropped out of school and things of that nature. So I started a program called Rodney's Raptors because I felt it was ridiculous to have someone locked up or drop out of school in order for them to experience something and go on and share something else. So when I became a falconer, I associated the birds just like with young people. If someone didn't step in and help these raptors because 80-90% won't make it through the first winter, then same way with the young people. If you don't step in and help, a lot of them will end up with records and everything that carries with them for the rest of their life. So 30 years from now, that same mistake that they made 30 years ago will haunt them forever. So my thing was to try to stop that from happening, give them something else to do, and those same young people would then turn around and help someone else.
I love the joining of something larger than yourself. And gaining the self-esteem, realizing I can help another. I can help a raptor, and then I can teach other people to be raptors. Did I hear you say that the system did not want you? They only wanted you to work with adjudicated youth, people who were in the system. They didn't want you to use your skills and these great birds to prevent kids from getting into the system?
No, what had happened was the program that we worked with, when young kids would come in that were still in school, that were doing good, they couldn't be employed with us because the program was for adjudicated youth. And if you had to do a 1,700-hour program with us, you couldn't be in school. So that means we only worked with kids that dropped out of school, that were locked up, that were court-appointed and things of that nature. So anyone that wasn't, you couldn't do anything. So that's one of the reasons Rodney's Raptors was started. And now Dippy's Dream, named after my mom. So I'm building a sanctuary here in Virginia so that young people or anyone will have a place to heal, to come out and just reconnect with nature.
What would your mom think seeing the sanctuary that that you're building, Rodney's thoughts? What she think of? What did she think of your new life as a falconer and helping these young people? And how'd she feel in watching that change in you?
Well, I'll tell you this. I tell everyone, my mom was always proud of me. She wasn't always proud of what I was doing. Before she left here, I got to make her proud of what I was doing. Biggest supporter is an understatement. That lady there, the strength to everything that I have comes from her. That's why I'm here now building this sanctuary, making sure that her name, her legacy carries on.
When you, Rodney, we got about 2 minutes left with Rodney Stotch, Rodney's Raptors. When you see young kids who have come up the tough way and they hold these birds, do you ever get that feeling that, man, I'm inside your head, I feel what you're feeling? Do you see them have that same appreciation and this realization that this beautiful, strong animal can't survive without you helping them? Do you watch that in their eyes?
Yes. I tell people, I have the guys that you would consider the worst of society. No one wants. You put, they're sitting there, I'll kill this, I'll do this. You put a bird on their hand, oh my God, oh my God. And they're just going off. And I tell them, I say, you see that feeling you have right now? Yeah. Tell me that didn't feel better than the feeling you had 10 seconds ago. Yeah. Let's hold on to that feeling right there. And then I got you. And we just keep going from there.
I love it. How do Rush's listeners reach out to help Rodney's Raptors?
You can go to my website, rodneysraptors.webs.com. I'm on PayPal, Instagram, Facebook, everything. I'm just out here trying to make sure that people have something else to do besides get in trouble.
In all the days I've worked with people, in all the days I've seen people who've been harmed or traumatized or face these tough times, I've never met one of them yet who didn't appreciate a hand, even if it's an attempt to help. Rodney, God bless you for your journey, and it's just so wonderful that you get to honor your mama this way. So, and thank you so much for joining us today, Rodney.
Thank you. Thank you guys for having me. I truly appreciate it.
Yep. Hey, folks, listen, this is something that we need to be behind, which is all of us has needed redemption at some point or another. And incarceration does some things, right? Sometimes it's necessary. And so is the ability to re-enter society if we ever hope to have a truly civil society. It's Todd Herman, your guide host this week on the EIB Network. Okay, moving pieces to this because it involves a confluence of things. I love that word. You got Joe Biden's dementia. You got people accidentally speaking truth, removing themselves from political dogma and accidentally speaking common sense truth, even as they do so behind a militarized installation in Washington, D.C. that exists only for theater. Even now that the science has suddenly changed, this great rigor that, well, the masks, they just, I mean, it's really hot. We're sweating. Lots of pieces here. So Joe Biden, his dementia canceled the Keystone Pipeline just right off the bat. Now, his energy secretary is saying that that's pipes are the best way to transport fuel. Follow the bouncing thoughts as people accidentally speak common sense. First, an unidentified reporter asks, can you tell us what is the feasibility of using rail cars to transport fuel into affected areas? I know that's being looked at.
The DOT is looking at that, and so we'll have to wait till their analysis is done. These are not easy solutions. This is why we have doubled down on ensuring that there's an ability to truck oil in, gas in. But it's the pipe is the best way to go.
Okay, so that's Jennifer Granholm, the energy secretary, who's saying pipe is the best way to go. She just spoke common sense. Again, Biden's dementia canceled the Keystone Pipeline, whereas John Kerry has us spending tax money on inefficient, useless windmills to go in the waters off of rich communities. And those are made by slave labor, literal slave labor in concentration camps of the Chinese Communist Party. But John Kerry's involved in this, accidentally speaking common sense. Here's Kerry, who considers it a mere problem that we're buying these windmills made by slaves of the Chinese Communist Party concentration camps. He admits pipelines are the best way to transport oil.
Isn't it true that pipelines are more carbon delivery efficient than trains or trucks or other forms of delivery? If you could answer just that limited question.
Yeah, that is true. I think that is true. But it doesn't mean you necessarily want to be adding another line when there are other alternatives. But is it better than train and better than that? Yes, it is.
But alternatives like buying inefficient windmills made by Uyghur slaves in concentration camps created by the Chinese Communist Party. That's the alternative to pipelines. You see how they have to bounce back and forth between actual common sense and dogma? Now, this is just right here, just an amazing call you're about to hear on this topic. This is a trucker who you'll see is better educated on the economy and energy infrastructure than what's-his-name, Mayor Pete, will ever be. And he tells Rush, this trucker, how his Limbaugh Institute education forever turned him away from Barack Obama and the Democrats.
This is Philadelphia. Dennis, great to have you, sir, on the EIB Network. Hello.
Rush, I'm a 48-year-old black man who has all my life been Democrat. And I want to say that as a truck driver, I listened to you and been angry with you, but over the years, but I still listen to you because I'm in a truck. But I have finally come to see something, and I want to say 3 years ago, I would have never saw myself or thought of myself saying that I agree with you. And I am now dropping my association with Obama, who I voted for a few years ago. And I'll never vote for this guy. I can't. I'm thinking of dropping even being a Democrat, but it's all because of you in a lot of ways. But the tipping point for me was Newt Gingrich, what he said a few days ago, something I would have really been very angry with and almost insulted by. He said that Obama's decision regarding this pipeline was stunningly stupid. And I could not disagree with that, because this pipeline, in addition to the fact that it's automatically going to bring a lot of jobs, without a doubt, help the economy, it's going to have an immediate impact on the price of things, impact on the price of gas, which in my industry is enormous. People don't understand how the price of fuel affects everything that they pay for, from food to any goods that they get. But the bottom line is that this man, because of what I can clearly see as politics to support these environmental people, he is willing to destroy this country, destroy the economy. It's a no-brainer in terms of getting away from dependence on the foreigners, foreign oil. And I just cannot, in good conscience, continue to hurt my family in the amount that I'm paying for fuel, groceries, and everything else. I cannot, in good conscience, support this man when this is obviously political, because it would have helped this country and the economy. So I want to say I'm finally seeing the light, and I'm done with him.
This is major, Dennis. I mean, the Keystone Pipeline, you are one of the biggest 180-degree changes of mind that we've ever had on this program. And you just changed your mind 3 weeks ago after a lifetime of thinking something else.
Well, I would say to every black American who feels they have to have some loyalty to this man simply because he's black or because he's Democrat, we're shooting ourselves in the foot. We're killing ourselves. We don't have we're having a hard time as black people anyway. Lord,
God, you're singing from my hymnal. You're in my choir, Dennis. You are exactly right. This Keystone Pipeline, everybody's scratching their heads. This is causing a lot of people to look at Obama in a different way. How did you know that he was acting out of loyalty to his environmentalist buddy? I mean, if you knew that, along you were willing to tolerate that for a while, but what was the last straw about this?
Well, it's really a slow thing, I think, starting with the Obamacare and the fact that I know that the government doesn't do anything well. They just don't do things well. Everything they stick their hands into, it always becomes more expensive. But this thing here with the Keystone thing, I know how the environmentalists are. I understand the fact that they don't really want that. They want us to eat grass and live in trees.
They're trying to force you off the road, Dennis.
Well, that's true. And because of the fact that I agree with that. But, you know, I just know that this guy was doing it more or less out of trying to buy time until the election is done. It became obvious to me that, I mean, nobody with any sense can't deny the fact that this is going to help us. And I'm hurting, to be honest with you, and I'm really hurting, and the fact that he's siding with these environmental people over just the whole economy, the whole nation, and black people, my people in particular, because we are really poor in a lot of ways compared to white America. And I used to be kind of bitter toward white America in a lot of ways, but I'm not now. I really thank you for what you've done, and this is really I feel it's changed my life.
Well, you've rocked my boat here. You've floated my boat. I can't thank you enough. What a day! I mean, guys like you and calls like yours are just one of the best things that happens to me. I can't thank you enough.
Hey, who's your family's unofficial photographer? There's always one. In Rush's family, it was his dad. Whoever it is has a long-standing second role as the archivist for all those family films, videotapes, and pictures. That's where Legacy Box comes in. Rush has the details.
Many families have a self-appointed family photographer. In my family, it was my dad. My dad, whenever the family got together, my dad got the camera, the cameras, the tripod, and insisted everybody gather together for official family photos, and he's out taking candid shots, and he had a Super 8 camera he's shooting films with and so forth. And every time the family got together, somebody in every family fancies themselves as the videographer. And nowadays, with the video capabilities of pocket computers, the role is slowly fading away because anybody can do it, and you don't need any extra equipment. But for many years, the person in the family that not only took the pictures and videos kept them in some kind of order. And not everybody in the family always got to see everything that was taken or shot. If you wanted to look at those again these days, you probably can't, because who's got a Super 8 projector laying around, or a Betamax or VHS player laying around, or even a 35mm slide projector laying around that people used to take pictures with those? And everybody says, well, we'll get it transferred somehow. It's one of these things that's on the to-do list that never gets done. Now you can get it done, and you don't have to do it. There's one company, when it comes to making those memories accessible again and brought back to life, that company is Legacy Box. They are the best when it comes to converting all these old home movies and films and photos to digital files. Legacy Box makes this easy. You order their specially made shipping box. It's protected so nothing gets damaged en route. You throw all the stuff that you want transferred in there. You send it to them. They do it in 2 weeks and send it back to you. Get started at legacybox.com/rush. If you do that, you'll get 40% off at that website, off the plan that you choose. Legacybox.com/rush is the website. Folks, you're going to love the experience, and you're going to ask yourself why you didn't do it sooner once this is done. Legacybox.com/rush.
It's Todd Herman, your guide host this week on the EIB Network. Every Friday, we're doing something called Road Trip with Rush, where we're creating a playlist from his bumper music and revisiting his priceless commentary that went into it. For this week's song, we take you back to 1968. Now, I want you to imagine a 17-year-old Rush jamming to this tune on the radio after school.
Fogarty, Creedence Clearwater Revival, a Green River, 1968 in the bumper rotate. You know, it's amazing, Mr. Sturdley, how all the music that we grew up with endures and is still played today. And I'll guarantee you, the rot gut that is popular top 40 the last 10 years will not survive after it's lost its initial wave. In other words, we won't be playing whoever the hell you could cite. But the stuff from our generation endures.
And it does. And listen, I got to tell you that this came up in the pre-show discussion. So that's Creedence Clearwater Revival Rush is talking about. And you're going to be able to hear Rush's playlist. They're going to create an entire series of this, of the playlist at Rush Love. You get to get that from EIB, so look forward to that on Friday shows. Then eventually you'll be able to have a playlist of your own to just follow Rush and his commentary. You know how much you love music. The fact is that John Fogerty, who is the principal songwriter, one of the brothers in Creedence Clearwater Revival, he was sued. He was sued for ripping off his own music. I think it was called Fantasy, the record label that in fact made Creedence Clearwater Revival famous. The owner thereof, he and Fogerty did not like one another, and Fogerty apparently wrote songs about him and said mean things. So when John Fogerty came out with his solo record, you remember Put Me in Coach and songs like that, Run to the Jungle was the song in question. He was actually accused of plagiarizing his own work. So to defend himself and this eventually went to the Supreme Court. You can read about this at rushlimbaugh.com. To defend himself, he went into court in San Francisco with his guitar. You're on the jury. And here comes a rock legend to give you a private concert. And what he did was very similar to something Henry Ford did. Henry Ford's son once tried to seize control of the company by saying his dad was stupid and didn't know things, and the attorney asked Henry Ford to name the first, you know, however many presidents, and Henry Ford said, "Sir, I don't know. I don't keep information like that in my head. But here's the difference between me and you. I have people who work for me who can tell me not just their names, but their shoe sizes and personal habits. That's what I do. I employ smart people." So Fogerty's in the courtroom. It's a Henry Ford-type defense. He gets out his guitar and he explains, "I'm self-taught. I don't have a musical education. I taught myself to do these things. So I know maybe five, maybe now, all these years later, I know six chords. And I have a very limited vocal range. I mean, great voice, rock and roll voice, but I've got this very limited vocal range." And he, in court, defended himself by saying, "I can't write other songs. This is what I do. This is why CCR sounds like it does." This is a great moment in rock history. So again, rushlimbaugh.com eventually will have all that stuff. At rushlimbaugh.com, you can get the podcast, Rush Limbaugh, the man behind the golden EIB microphone. More as we continue, Todd Herman, your guide host this week on the EIB Network. Coming up next hour, you've heard that, forget her name. Oh, Ellen DeGeneres, that her show's getting canceled. A, you won't believe who she blames. B, you will believe who predicted this. You will. Experts in psychology was. Like we've said, Rush easily could have been a PhD in human psychology. In fact, he probably exceeded most of them in knowledge about human behavior. He could have also had been a PhD in sociology. Next hour, more on the truth detector's discovery of a subgroup of Americans that troubled him.
A lot of you have been listening for a long time, 30 years. There's been a bugaboo of mine that I have been mentioning for almost all of those 30 years. And it's a group that I dubbed The Offended, capital T, capital O, The Offended. And they have bothered me from the very beginning. You could have 99 people in a room and one of them would be offended by what the 99 are doing, and the 99 would have to stop doing it.
And what has the left been building upon? They have been building societies of people who can be offended by a statement of biological fact. They can be offended if you do not wrap your face in a warm, wet, dark face diaper and inhale what you exhale. They can be offended if you do not agree that wrapping your face in such an apparatus makes you a good American. They've been building on this because, of course, they're building to divide, and hatred divides. We'll continue. Todd Herman, your guide host this week on the EIB Network. Today is the day the Lord has made, and I'm grateful and glad for this day and these times in which God's decided we will live. It is Open Line Friday, 800-282-2882. I want to thank again Team EIB for allowing me this incredible honor and privilege, and thank all of you for hanging out with us. RushLimbaugh.com has the great podcast, Rush Limbaugh, the man behind the golden EIB microphone that Bo Snerdly, real name James Golden, was kind enough to premiere with us this week. So this will make a lot of people who are supporters of President Trump uncomfortable, and yet we must be truthful with one another. One of the areas in which I broke with the president was his decision to start that commission that went about banning television shows. And, you know, I mean, it was very controversial to begin with, but when he founded the pro-American speech only commission and then went into Hollywood, and I mean, it was unseemly to see these arrests and, you know, the vans unmarked pulling A-list actors into them for the crime of speaking out politically. That was a chilling moment in American history that, oh, wait, that never happened. Oh, wait. I'm sorry. I was living in the head of people who live in Hollywood. Dang it. That's a weird place. All dusty with cocaine and pretend dystopia. I'm still dizzy from it. Ellen DeGeneres, I've never seen her show. I'm so proud of that. There's a lot of shows. I've never seen her. Not once. Not a single episode, so I can't judge. I saw a clip of one. So her show has been canceled. She, according to The Hill, has someone to blame for this. During an interview with NBC's Today co-anchor Savannah Guthrie, she told Guthrie that the recent controversy surrounding her show, Ellen, wasn't the main reason why she ended her program. It's because of President Trump. Changes in society. Because President Trump changed society. He wasn't the reflection of society. He changed it. One man. Right. That had nothing to do with this. You see what I'm talking about? The room dusty with cocaine and dystopia and Trump everywhere and pulling people into unmarked vans. It's certainly not low ratings and the toxic work scandal. Oh, is it? So the toxic work scandal. Remember this? DeGeneres said Thursday, and also I have to say, if anybody else was saying it, it was really interesting because I'm a woman and it did feel very misogynistic. Well, number one, what do you mean woman? That's a biological anachronism. What are you talking about? She apparently ran in a place of employment where a black woman who used to work on her program told BuzzFeed, she experienced racist comments, actions, and microaggressions. I don't know what a microaggression is. I know what the word means. I've never seen one proven. But when she was hired, a senior level producer told her and another black employee, "Oh, wow, you both have box braids. I hope I don't get you too confused." Huh. And at a work party, this woman said that one of the main writers told her, "I'm sorry, I only know the names of the white people who work here." And other co-workers awkwardly laughed it off instead of coming to her defense. There are people who worked around Ellen who said her whole be nice thing, it was a great big dodge. Now listen, I won't have it. Everyone in Hollywood is just as nice as they seem on their face. There's no, I mean, it's not like they go behind closed rooms or doors and, you know, do a Harvey Weinstein or a, how many other names can we name? I'm not accusing Ellen of doing that. I'm just pointing out that Hollywood is made up of people who pretend for a living. Sometimes that includes pretending to be really, really, really so very nice. Who could have seen it coming? Ellen DeGeneres canceled. Who could have seen it coming? You know who saw it coming? Rush Limbaugh made a prediction 9 months ago that Ellen would be canceled or cancel herself.
Looky here. Former Ellen DeGeneres staffers bash toxic workplace culture on her talk show. Had you heard about this? A black woman. Oh, no. You don't say. A black woman working on the Ellen DeGeneres show said she repeatedly dealt with racist comments and microaggressions. And yet another damning story relating to Ellen DeGeneres, the alleged comedian. The former employee was among 11 mostly former staffers who detailed horror stories from the toxic work environment at the Ellen DeGeneres show in a BuzzFeed article, pulling the curtain back on the cheery comedic host. Now, you probably have heard or seen people say that Daniel Snyder must sell his team due to all of this harassment and the charges brought to light by the Washington Post. They say that Snyder, he may not have been the subject of the complaints, he may not have been one of the perps, but he's responsible and he should sell a team. So I read this story about Ellen DeGeneres. I thought, this is no different than the bombshell story about the Washington Redskins, except the Ellen DeGeneres story is not presented as a bombshell at all. Both stories detail toxic work environments and the DeGeneres show, particularly for African-American workers. One story is about a white guy who owns an NFL franchise. Sexual harassment is alleged. The other concerns a white woman who owns a television show in Hollywood. Racism is alleged. Think these two situations be viewed by the fake news media as the same or different? Ha! We know the answer. I can't recall, other than when they started dumping on Weinstein, and that wasn't even like that. Everybody in the world is dumping on this babe. Other actors, other actresses, other entertainers, not management. Other people. I've got a story here. Actor Brad Garrett and Leah Thompson have added their voices to the dozens of former staffers on the Degenerate show who have alleged a toxic work environment. It's unheard of for Hollywood celebrities to say a bad word about this woman. It never happens. And how about the irony that her motto is be kind? I mean, there's something here that we don't know. There's always stuff that we don't know on stories like this that they just don't want to mention. But I think it's more than that. I think it's more than that. Another story, she wants to resign or retire. Oh, no, she doesn't want to retire. So, and what would normally save her, she's a lesbian, is irrelevant. Normally, that would give her an insurance policy and, you know, not only a get-out-of-jail-free card, don't go anywhere near her card. So she must really be something much worse than her image is. Like, be kind.
Yeah. Now, point of comparison. Earlier this week, we had James Golden, whom you probably know as Bo Snerdly, on this program to share. And he was very clear. He's one team member amongst many who made this program what it is. He thanked you and us, the listeners to the program. He also pointed out the longevity of Team EIB. 30 years, in many cases, 20 years, locked together in a family atmosphere. But what did we hear for all those years about Rush because of his politics? What people thought of his politics, most of them having never heard that. Fascinating that he made the prediction that Ellen would be canceled or get herself canceled. We'll come back with your phone calls next on Open Line Friday. Todd Herman, your guide host this week on the EIB Network. Coming up on the EIB Network, remember the Fonz? Wow, it's like pop culture hour. He's getting hated on. Got himself a fish that he caught with a hook in its mouth, and he's getting hated on. And Rush has some commentary about the offended. We'll talk about that. Let's get out and chat with my fellow lifelong listeners, I'm sure, to the EIB network. Scott in Kingsley, Michigan. You're on the Rush Limbaugh program. Todd Herman filling in. Scott, thank you for waiting. I'm glad you're here. Hi.
Hi, Todd. Thanks for taking the call. Hey, we've got a little bit of a pipeline situation in Michigan that's flying under the proverbial radar, and our governor is painting herself into a corner. Not sure if you've heard of the Line 5 Enbridge pipeline, but it runs in the water under the Straits of Mackinac, with the mighty Mackinac Bridge up in northern Michigan.
Yeah.
And it's 23 million gallons a day, I believe, of crude and natural gas, and the governor is demanding that it be shut down and is threatening to confiscate the profits of this oil company, Enbridge. But Enbridge has the backing of the Canadian government, and they say it's not up to the governor. And we've also got our Energy Secretary Granholm is our former Michigan governor, who just said pipelines are the best way to transport fuel. So now our Democratic governor may be going head-to-head with her own favorite pal Jennifer Granholm and Joe Biden.
Yeah, but Jennifer Granholm accidentally spoke scientific rigor. She accidentally spoke, you know, common sense. So she'll have to roll back over into the ideological pretend world of wokeaholism. Your governor, she is uniquely unlikable. She is everything I see about her. She seems uniquely repugnant. And I mean that because what do we have? Everybody on her staff went on vacation without woke masks when she was pushing the woke masks. Then didn't she get caught flying around in a private plane against her orders to stay home and with no woke mask? And then she refused to answer those questions. Is this that uniquely unlikable woman?
This is one and the same. You are correct, sir.
So now, and I don't look, if you ever take a gander at me, you'll understand I'm the last guy to go around making fun of the way people look, because I mean, that could be turned against me in every other way, in every possible conception of the way. But doesn't she also like smear her face in a lot of petroleum products?
Unsubstantiated report.
So she's thinking of seizing a pipeline or threatening to do this. So if this were Trump, if she were Trump, this would be her starting a war with the Canadians, basically, right?
Yeah, that's a pretty good comparison. Our Republicans, there's been a compromise proposed that they will build a tunnel under and around the pipeline in case there's a leak. But of course, that's not acceptable either.
I just build it
to completely shut down.
Build a tunnel for her to walk back and forth in. I think it's a safe, warm tunnel. She can just walk back and forth. I think Michigan would be better for it. Thank you for telling us about that. It's the Democrats, they get a taste of power, and it's like they become power ticks. Just suck on all the life energy of everybody else. Scott's a great call. Thanks very much for joining us. Dave, just up the right next door. Okay, I'm going to try it. Muckwanago, Wisconsin. Muckwanago, Wisconsin. Dave, welcome to Rush's program. It's Todd Herman. I'm glad you're here.
Thank you, Todd. It's so good to talk to you. You're like one of my favorite guys on this radio station.
Thank you.
The biggest thing I was thinking about was when I'm looking at all the issues, I mean, just in the show now, you've covered, I don't know, umpteen different issues. And it just feels like, you know, just like what Obama was doing, it's like, he has us running over here, then he's running over there.
Yeah.
We're running over there, then he's running over here. And I'm one of those guys that just likes to keep things really simple and clear. And I have a comment. It's a comment question. If you could pick one political issue, and I would also say one personal virtue, because I think we're going to need that with this rocky road in front of us, what would those two be? I know I have mine, but I'd love to hear what yours are.
Okay, so mine is to pray to God on your knees and recognize God is almighty and that God is in charge and is not mocked, and none of this surprises God. At no point has he said, wow, that Chuck Schumer is pretty clever, and I didn't see that critical race theory thing coming. That's for me, to recognize that and the power of God almighty, to know the ending, right? And also to ask ourselves, you know, for our country and for what some of the been allowed to occur in this country, that we beg for forgiveness. That's a virtue. And then in that, you're recognizing that you're not the most powerful thing alive. And that then separates you from the communists who are trying to take over our country to be the most powerful things on this temporal earth for now. So I know that's a lot, but that would be the first thing. Second thing is not a, see, there's, you need to separate this. You're saying one political act. There are political acts you can do or not do. On a fundamental meta basis, we must push every single Republican to stop anything to do with H.R. 1, which is the ridiculously named For the People Act, which is the Democrat Party seizing elections, after which they won't be elections anymore. They will be officially selections. That must be stopped. That's a meta basis. But at the same time, we also must choose the things we can do. And we must seize control of our school boards and our zoning boards. And so those are actions you can take. So there's pressure you can apply, which is a political act. Actions you can take. Everybody, if everybody who listens to this program ran for a school board, if there's open positions or not, or zoning boards, you'd be surprised at the power they're in. City councils, county councils, we could flip this country pretty quickly. It's just that we conservatives don't like to do that. So that's my concept. What's yours?
First of all, as a pastor, I love to hear your heart when it comes to what you, your Christian worldview, because it's right in line with what I'm thinking. I would say I agree with you. The political issue of the day, that everything else is moot if we do not address election integrity. And the virtue I was thinking of, I've been reperusing Fox's Book of Martyrs, and I've been thinking through particular virtues, and I keep landing for the last several years on the virtue of courage. The one virtue that doesn't really apply to God, because only if you're vulnerable do you need that virtue, and God, of course, is invulnerable, but we are, and yet, boy, do we need that. We seem to be so scared of being canceled, being silenced, being criticized, and you don't have to be a jerk about it, but boy, we definitely have to have the courage to stand our ground.
Oh, there's no doubt. And listen, I'll give you an example, Dave. In my backyard, I think it's Kirkland, Washington, there was a father who went to a school board meeting, and he read to the school board words from their curricula being taught the kids, curse words being taught the kids, and he got kicked out of the meeting for reading what they're teaching. That was an uncomfortable thing for him to do. Bravery is not the absence of fear. It's acting in spite of it. So one of the things that we can do is make liberals live in the world they're creating. Make them live with the world they're creating for our kids. That's one of the things we can do. Dave, great phone call. Thank you so much. It's Dave Day. I'm not going to have a Dave contest. Last time that backfired. Let's talk to Dave in Gurnee, Illinois. You're on the Rush Limbaugh program. Todd Herman, your guide host this week. Got about a minute together, Dave. Welcome.
Hey, Todd. A couple hours ago, you were talking about the suppression of words or the power of words, and you did play a great clip by Rush. But I wanted to point out a comedic routine by Lenny Bruce that he did in the early 60s, and it was about the N-word. Now, you can punch it up on YouTube, and I'm sure they'll take it down after I point it out, but he repeats the N-word over and over again and makes the point. If you say the word multiple times, you lose the power of the word. And what the left has done is they have suppressed the word, and then they add all this power to it. And I think it's important that we have radical liberal heroes who have made the same points to bring those up so that we see that we're not standing alone by reiterating what they once said back in the 60s.
And I hear what you're saying about Lenny Bruce. And I've seen that clip, and I've actually studied some Lenny Bruce. And I'm not one who's going to go repeating that word, because I personally, it makes me sick to say the word. And that's who I am. That's how I was brought up. The point about these words, though, I would go this way. They're changing the meaning of words right under our nose, and we need to push back on those. So we need to say things like this. And I hate to beat this drum all the time, but if we lose this battle, there's no more battle. So I will say things like, well, I'm a man, by which I mean adult human male. And I'll say that in meetings, right? Because we need to be able to hold on to some reality, even if it involves talking about the fawns and a fish and the offended. Next on the EIB Network. This is, I'm sure this story about EIB, or pardon me, at rushlimbaugh.com, and you'll want to see this. Do you remember Henry Winkler? Of course, he's got to hate this, the fawns. And I guess he does things now, but I haven't had a TV in 19 years. How would I know? I do remember the biggest letdown of my life was going to meet Henry Winkler at the Autoboat Speed Show in Spokane, Washington. We used to go to that every year. It's a long story. I was there for 2 weeks all day. Long story. But he was going to be there, and I was waiting in line, and it was this long corner, and man, we're going to meet the Fonz. And I come around the corner, and then I realize, what? He has like an uncle sweater on, like a, that's a button-up sweater. It's not, and this really, and he's really small. And I was looking at the line, I kind of said, do we have to stay? My dad is like, we've invested 3 hours of Saturday morning. You are staying and you're gonna enjoy meeting Henry Winkler. I did get a Fonz signed photo. He signed it, his name, and then the Fonz, and then got a picture with them, and he was quite kind. He's now taking heat for a picture of what looks to me to be a beautiful river trout, but I'm not a fish expert. And he says, I can't even express the beauty everywhere on our planet. He's holding the fish. The fish has a hook in its mouth. Doesn't look like he's going to eat the fish. But if he were to be snuck up from behind by a grizzly bear, it would eat him, and it wouldn't even take a photo, and he wouldn't think it was beautiful. He'd just think it was tasty as he peels his skin off his. So a bunch of Hollywood types are very upset about this. There is a backlash. On popculture.com, they have to write this. The actor, whose net worth is reported to be $40 million. So because he's a rich man, it makes it worse that he caught a fish temporarily out of the water and is going to put it back. Now, this fish, and you, if you know river trout, you know that they won't eat bugs. It's a moral thing with them. So I guess in that way, there's some defense for this. So this is an example of something that really, really bugged Rush. I said earlier in the program, I do believe that Rush had an actual PhD level knowledge of human psychology. I think that's hard to argue with, given what he did and accomplished. He also could have been a PhD in sociology, because he was on the cutting edge of societal evolution when he talked about the offended, which is really just the woke of today.
A lot of you have been listening for a long time, 30 years. There's been a bugaboo of mine that I have been mentioning for almost all of those 30 years. And it's a group that I dubbed The Offended, capital T, capital O, The Offended. And they have bothered me from the very beginning. You could have 99 people in a room and one of them would be offended by what the 99 are doing, and the 99 would have to stop doing it. And it forever bugged me. Who are these offended? Why, just because they're offended, does everybody have to kowtow to them? And it started with smoking. Then it started with eating certain kinds of foods. Then it started with words that people said. And then pretty soon, the offended became the primary group of people implementing political correctness. They're a bunch of censors. They're a bunch of busybodies who figured out that to get what they want, just act offended. Rather than say that they're a politically organized group, just offended. They're not even political in their view. They're just living their lives and they are offended by various things that happen. And it just bugged me that everybody kowtowed to them. What's special about being offended? Grow up! In terms of being offended, I don't even want to give people the power to offend me. Well, it's been a pet peeve of mine, and now it's an officially established political organization, the offended. They are the people that implement and enforce political correctness and censorship. I think this group known as the offended are actually a very active, purposeful political organization that are camouflaging themselves to make them look like just mentally disturbed. But the bottom line is, why does everybody kowtow to anybody who's offended? Without even thinking, well, that's stupid to be offended by that. Just don't, if that offends you, then ignore it. But the left, anybody comes along and claims that something offends them, they are immediately given full attention, credibility, and the people who offend them are then challenged to stop whatever they're doing. And I think it is it's one of the serious ways in which our culture has been under assault. And what really hit me about it when it first started is something that still bothers me today. There is no pushback against it. It was this bad. Somebody in an apartment with the windows closed and the air conditioning on, 300 feet, a football field away from another apartment, also closed with the air conditioning on, and somebody in that apartment smoking a cigarette, the person in the football field away apartment claiming she could smell that person's cigarette secondhand smoke, and it offended her. And so the town came along and made the guy stop smoking. When there's no way this woman could have possibly smelled anybody's cigarette smoke from a football field away in a closed-up apartment. And instead of somebody making that point, they just went to the person smoking a cigarette. You are disturbing a fellow tenant. You must stop. This is before there were any bans. This is before there were any public bans on smoking or any of this. This is how they got this stuff going. And I maintain to you, there was no way anybody, a football field's 300 feet, 100 yards, no way two people in two closed-up apartments could smell anything going on in any of those two apartments. But because one person was offended, why, the other person had to stop what they were doing. And there was no pushback. The person who was smoking, okay, I'm sorry. Please don't punish me. Instead of leaving the apartment, going to the other apartment, a football field away, and blowing smoke through the front door and saying, screw you. Just acquiesced. You're acquiescing to the offended.
Yes, that's the MAHA. It reminds me of Salt Lake City, Utah. When the Olympics was coming to town, there were some apartment buildings next to where they were to go, or actually very nice condos, and some people had some free Tibet signs. And officials with the Chinese Communist Party made it into that building, found the apartment, knocked on the door, and said, you have to take these flags down. You have to take these down. And they said, no, we don't. This is America. It was America. Now the left has moved this to the point where there are verboten words and phrases, and they're working on more of those. It's all part of dividing society. James in Spokane, Washington, you're on the Rush Limbaugh program. Todd Herman, your guide host this week. Hi, James.
How you doing, sir?
Doing great. Appreciate you calling.
So you had mentioned earlier this week of a cold civil war. And I've been pondering this idea long before you ever mentioned it, that eventually will we get to a hot civil war?
Well, God forbid.
And that kind of, well, that's going to be a ruination for this entire country if that ever does happen. The problem being, though, is that, in my opinion, that is where the progressives, the communists, are trying to set us up as, so they can have their glorious revolution.
No, you're not wrong. No, listen, this will sound hysterical unless you have done the study that I've done and talked to the people I've talked to or looked at papers. You can read a paper called Network-Enabled Anarchy, which is tied to Rutgers University. It compares the recruiting methods of Antifa to Hamas and ISIS. Similar sorts of recruits. They want people on the edges of society, people with deep mental illness, people who are addicted to drugs, people who like to be violent. They recruit them on purpose. They're definitely trying to push us over the edge into this. And here's the thing they're running into is the goodness of the American people. The Americans don't want this. And here's what a lot of these little babies in the streets with Antifa, et cetera, they're just cannon fodder. What they don't get, they have no idea what unmitigated violence and fighting for your life is like. And there's a lot of people in this country who know exactly what's that like, know exactly what that is, and understand it because they hadn't been through it because we asked them to do it. And to the people who in their hearts, gosh, I hope you'll pray for peace, because there's some people who are so frustrated with things that in their heart they're beginning to say, but bring it. No, you may think that you're ready for truly unmitigated violence everywhere, but 99% of us aren't. And God forbid we ever get there. Thank you for the call, James. Appreciate it. Todd Herman, your guide host this week on the EIB Network. So a week from tomorrow is the 28th anniversary of Dan's Bake Sale. If you're new to the program, you won't know about that, but it's legendary. And EIB has a great show planned for this. Brent Winterbull will be in all next week. We'll take you through this. So commingled with the regular news of the day, they're going to revisit a few of the gems from that fateful event in Fort Collins, Colorado, back in 1993, including a couple surprises. You will not want to miss this. Here's Rush getting us all pumped for the big day.
Dan's Bake Sale. You have the theme song ready for Dan's Bake Sale. Here are people who just want to get together and enjoy life. Have a great time. Here's our update theme, because there's a little bit more information to let you know
in
about.
Ready America, Dan's Bake Sale is coming soon.
This kind of Dan, wrestling boss fan, to acquisition, boss edition, he'll raise some money, it rages honey, Dan's baking cookies.
Coming soon to Fort Collins, Colorado, to help Dan raise money to purchase the Rush Limbaugh newsletter, Dan's Bake Sale. Buy a cookie for conservatism.
We'll raise some money, and rage is honey. We're baking cookies.
Well, thousands are expected, and the reporters are saying, are you surprised? And I say, no. This has been going on for 5 years. The Rush Limbaugh program has been out there drawing crowds for 5 years. We're surprised here that it's taken the mainstream press so long to see it. It's going to be big, and I want to update you people in Los Angeles on the latest. They filled up their chartered jet inside of 3 hours, and that would have taken 3 minutes, except the volume of phone calls blew out four of their six phone lines that were dedicated to reserving seats on the airplane. And they cut their waiting list off at 200, but they had calls coming into the dedicated numbers all the way through 7 o'clock this morning, just a couple of hours ago. So that's two chartered 727s that we know of. And there was a rumor that a guy out in L.A. was trying to put together yet another charter. Nothing has happened on that, but the interest in this thing is continuing to balloon. Again, it is Saturday the 22nd, just a couple of days from now in Fort Collins, Colorado. Dan's Bake Sale, all of this is for one reason, and that's for this young man to get $29.95 to purchase a copy of the Limbaugh letter. That's why we should never lose focus, never lose sight, my friends, of exactly what's happened and what this is all about. It's not a publicity stunt. It's nothing other than the pursuit of a subscription to a newsletter and the inherent trickle-down policies which have occurred. Crowd estimates now range anywhere from 25,000 to 75,000 people. I just got the latest weather forecast. Scattered showers are like a 40% possibility. And at the time I'm slated to be in town, there's virtually no chance of rain. So that's when you want to be there, is when I'm there.
So next Friday, we'll take you back to the early 90s to relive the historic day and hear from members of the EIB team who were there. Got some great stories, plus some exciting news. You can go to RushLimbaugh.com to see Rush's first TV show after Dan's Bake Sale. It's filled with archival footage and, of course, Rush's commentary of the day. Viola in New Jersey. Welcome to the Rush Limbaugh program. Todd Herman, your guide host. We've got about, 1 minute together, Viola. Welcome.
All right, Todd. I am so surprised that I got through today, and I'm so glad I did. I have noticed that after our president speaks, he never says, God bless America. What he says is, God bless our troops. Now, all the presidents we've had all the way back, I've been an elderly person, to Roosevelt, they said, God bless America. I mean, you know, Republican, Democrat, or whatever, God bless America. Don't we want somebody to lead this country who wants the whole country blessed? God bless our troops is what he says.
Yeah.
He makes it a point to say, God bless our troops. Now, isn't that something? What about the rest of us?
Well, at least he is saying the name of the Almighty, Viola, but you're exactly right. That's an awfully strange thing for him to limit the blessings just to our troops. You do remember when he found himself in trouble where he just about said he was speaking the Declaration of Independence and endowed by our, you know the thing. Maybe he's trying to placate his party who's trying to disappear the existence of God and divide the country that way by saying, well, I just said the troops, I didn't say the country. But it's awfully sad, isn't it?
He's trying to to divide the country. What if he's doing? We're going to pay for it when the leader of a country is bad. I read that all through my Bible.
Yeah.
It affects the whole nation.
Yes, it does.
And if he doesn't give God the glory, he's the leader of the country, we won't be. He does not say bless the country. You see, the troops are in the country.
I agree. They're in the country. They're part of the country, and thank God that they are. Thank you for the phone call, Viola. Great point. Hadn't thought of that. We'll wrap the show up when we come back. Todd Herman, your guide host this week on the EIB Network. Thank you to every single person on Team EIB for putting up with stumbles like that this week, and for you for hanging out with us. Brent Winterbull will be here all week next week. There's times for choosing in every generation. And one of the things the left is doing is they're creating a time for choosing. To choose the pursuit of life, liberty, and happiness, or to choose being told that you will either do this or that because that's what the ruler has decreed. They're setting up a circumstance where you choose to view everybody and judge them according to the content of their character or the color of their skin. They're choosing division in every way. And in one way, they're, of course, dividing us in terms of our views of God. And that's also a time for choosing. Some of us have chosen one path, some have chosen the other. And that's also part of human freedom. Always appreciated Rush's reluctance to really talk about faith on this program. And then when the time became short and the Maha shared with us that, he did choose to share that message. He chose to do that. It's been an absolute honor to be with you on this program. On behalf of EIB, thank you for being here.